Patrick McFadden. Mr. McFadden is Associate General Counsel at National Association of Broadcasters, where he helps develop and advance advocacy positions for NAB in the areas of spectrum policy and innovation. Prior to joining NAB in 2013, Patrick was an associate in the Washington office of Drinkerbittel and Reith, I think I said that right, where he practiced telecommunications law. He also worked as a broadcast legal assistant and as a licensing analyst for a wireless telecommunications carrier. Patrick earned his Juris Doctor from the George Washington University Law School and his undergraduate degree from Georgetown University. Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick McFadden.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. Thanks a lot to Michelle for inviting me. It's a delight to be here. So again, my name is Patrick McFadden. I'm with the NAB Legal Department. I work on spectrum policy issues, which these days means the repack is front and center in my bailiwick. So what I'd like to do is sort of go through some of the issues around the repack, about how we got here and what's next, and what are some of the challenges we foresee. And I will try to end on a good note. I'll try to end with good news. And I will definitely save time at the end for questions, so I hope you have a bunch. Just so I get a sense of the room, how many people are associated with a TV station that is being repacked as a result? Okay, good, great. Okay, highly relevant. all right, so how we got here. On April 13th, after an incentive auction, the first of its kind, that lasted about a year, the FCC put out a public notice announcing new channel assignments for repacked stations. And you undoubtedly all already know this, but the point of the incentive auction was to repurpose spectrum for wireless use in a voluntary, largely market-driven manner where broadcasters could choose to participate and get a share of the auction proceeds to go off the air or change bands. But a tremendous amount of the spectrum that was cleared in the auction was cleared as a result of repacking. So in that April 13th public notice, we learned that 957 television stations would be involuntarily repacked, assigned to new channels, as most of you know. So each station that was repacked was assigned to one of 10 repacking phases. As you all know, the FCC established a 39-month time frame for the entire repack to be completed, but that does not mean that every station has the full 39 months. There are 10 different repacking phases with 10 different deadlines for us all to keep track of. And in mid-July, all of you probably were hard at work submitting construction permit applications to the FCC for your new facilities on your new channel and submitting cost estimates as well for estimated costs to be reimbursed by the FCC for costs associated with moving to that new channel. One date that I do not have on here, because this is breaking news, just yesterday, broadcasters submitted their first progress reports. These are going to be periodically required by the FCC. Every repack station will have to submit a progress report indicating how it's doing. We're still analyzing those reports as we're making our way through them, but about 949 stations filed reports, and we believe that 849 stations indicated that they were on track to meet their current deadline. So I'm choosing to view that as actually pretty good news, that 849 stations think they're on track. There's probably 100 stations in the country that disagree with me that that's good news. But again, we'll learn more as this process continues to unfold. This is something we're all going to be working on for a lot of years. So just as a review, I mentioned everybody was assigned to one of 10 phases. I have a test. I have an eye chart up here for you all to check out. But basically, the first stations will be moving in roughly a year in phase one, and then the rest of the phases will follow thereafter under the FCC's current time frame. All stations should be completed with repacking in July 2020. So that's how we got here. The next question is sort of, where's here? So what's next from the FCC? So right now, as you may know, the FCC's contractor has been reviewing the cost estimates that repack stations put in. And they've been going back and forth with a lot of stations. Some of you may have been working on those requests for information that the FCC, that their contractor, rather, has turned over. But basically, they've asked for more information. If anybody included anything in a cost estimate that the FCC and its contractor felt was not sufficiently documented or that they wanted more information about, they've gone back to repack stations and asked for more information. That process has been going on, obviously, since July 12th. We've generally heard pretty good things about the contractor being pretty responsive and reasonable to work with. I hope that's accurate. So what's next? The good news is that we are now 6 months marking from that April 13th public notice. We are now 6 months into the 39-month time frame. The good news is the FCC is getting very close to making the first allocation of actual reimbursement funding, which I know from talking to a lot of broadcasters around the country, I know that's a subject of great concern, is when will money actually be available that people can draw against to actually begin doing repacking work. So the way that this is going to work, according to the FCC staff, is any repack station is going to get a notification from the FCC. And some of these have actually already started going out, so some of you may have already received them. Basically, a notification from the FCC saying, we have reviewed your cost estimate for reasonableness. Here is what we have determined is reasonable. That's going to be broken down by category in your cost estimates. You're going to have some level of transparency and detail into it, hopefully. You will also have an indication of what the total allocation for your station is going to be, what the total amount that the FCC thinks is reimbursable for your move, and what your initial allocation is, what that first chunk of money that is going to be available to you is. Which brings me to the next point. How big will initial allocations be? How much money will the FCC be putting out? This is a little bit complicated. There's a lot of background to this, so I'll try to sort of go through it kind of quickly. The Spectrum Act, which authorized the FCC to conduct the auction, allowed the FCC to reimburse stations for up to $1.75 billion in reimbursable expenses. For reasons that are a little complicated, the Act basically didn't let the FCC have all of that money at once. Instead, the FCC could borrow $1 billion right away, and then we get access to the other $750 million as the wireless guys who won licenses in the auction started getting those licenses granted and started paying the FCC money. So in that April 13th, actually let me go back further, 3 years ago in May 2014 when the FCC adopted its initial framework order setting out the ground rules for the auction, the FCC had indicated that they would be making initial allocations of up to 80% of estimated costs for commercial stations and up to 90% of estimated costs for non-commercial stations. In that April 13th of this year public notice where the FCC put out channel reassignments, however, they said that initial allocations would be made up to $1 billion. $1 billion based on the cost estimates that have been received so far would be about 50% of, actually it would be a little less than 50% of estimated costs. The background on that, where that $1 billion came from is again, that was money that the FCC would have access to immediately before any funds from the winning bidders on the wireless side were received. At this point, the FCC has all of that money, so they have access to the full $1.75 billion. So they could make more of that available, but their current plan is to make only around $1 billion available in that initial allocation, which again will cover somewhere around 50%, a little less than 50% of estimated costs, which came in at around $2.1 billion. We are working with the FCC and hope to continue to work with the FCC to try to get that changed. We would urge the FCC to put out as much money as possible as quickly as possible. I think everybody who is involved in this process, whether it's broadcasters, whether it's wireless companies, and the FCC itself, everybody wants this process to go as quickly as possible. Repacking brings nothing but disruption for broadcasters. It presents a lot of challenges for our industry. We'd like it to be over as quickly as possible. So one of the things that we're urging the FCC to do is to try to make sure that it doesn't unnecessarily create an otherwise avoidable source of delay by not promptly making funding available. In a perfect world, where we'd like to see the FCC is establishing a situation where there's never a point that a repacked broadcaster can't move forward with some work that they need to be doing in order to stay on schedule because they don't have funds. That's the worst case scenario, I think. That's an entirely avoidable situation. So we're working very hard to try to get the FCC to up that allocation and or to follow it, if they do stick with just making 50% available in the initial allocation, to follow that very quickly with a subsequent allocation, to try to get people as close to 80% or 90% up front as possible. So one question, what if you disagree with your allocation? What if you look at the notification that you get from the FCC's contractor and you go through it and you say, well, that's great, but you've authorized me $80,000 for X and I think it should cost $85,000. What do you do then? Unfortunately, right now, there's not really an established process for what you do then. Your first recourse is to the contractor itself, the same people who you've been dealing with, you've been responding to requests for information from. Basically, the people who send you the notification with your initial allocation, those are the first people you should talk to if you have a disagreement. If you continue to have a disagreement, right now, there's no formal process for escalating that within the FCC. That's a problem because, with all due respect to the FCC's contractor, I don't think we really want them, at the end of the day, being the sole administrator of a multi-billion dollar taxpayer fund. So we are trying to, and I know the FCC is working on processes to try to give some sort of additional review if you disagree with something that the FCC's contractor concludes. One thing, this is actually a request from the FCC, even though funding is not available yet, although hopefully in October, it will be, many of you have invoices from work that's already been done on your station, whether it's legal work that's been done. As someone who used to work at a law firm, I know that law firms like to send bills, so you may have some of those. Or whether it's RF engineering studies that have been done, or anything else that you've already gotten an invoice for, even though funding isn't available, you can, in the FCC's system, submit invoices. The FCC would actually love to get these from you. They've specifically asked me to ask you to submit those invoices if you have them available. Basically, they would like to sort of start reviewing things and get a sense of where costs are coming in relative to the estimates as soon as they can. So to the extent you have invoices that you have not yet submitted, and there's no reason you would have submitted them because funding's not available, so many people are sort of just sitting on their invoices until funds become available, you don't need to wait. You actually can go ahead and submit them, and the FCC would appreciate it. And that might help us help them realize that they're going to need to make additional allocations available very shortly. Okay, potential problems. There are a couple, and we're just going to touch on a few. But one is FM radio. This is an issue that, unfortunately, the FCC did not sufficiently consider in developing its approach to repacking. As you probably know, in many cases, there are FM facilities that are located either on a tower with a repack television station or so close to the tower of a repack television station that is unsafe for someone to climb the tower to do the work on the TV facility that they need to do because of RF radiation exposure concerns. In many cases, this might be a very minor disruption. The FM station might just need to power down very briefly. But in some cases, particularly if there's extensive work required on the TV facility, there could be considerable disruption. And unfortunately, that's not really considered in the FCC's repacking plan right now. NAB has commissioned a study to try to figure out what are the impacted FM stations. And basically what we looked at is FM stations that are located on or very close to towers of repacked television stations. We identified over 600 potentially impacted FM stations. Many of those, around half, I don't remember the exact number, but around half don't have offsite auxiliary facilities. So if they are subject to disruption, that's potentially a significant problem. That report is publicly available. It's not, unfortunately, right now up on our website, but I will give you my email address, and if anybody wants to take a look at it, you're more than welcome to. Because the FCC right now does not have a process in place to try to minimize disruption to FM stations, ultimately that's kind of going to be up to broadcasters, at least for now. So I would urge you to take a look at FM stations that might be affected by your repack and at least notify them, at least have a conversation with them if you haven't already, so that hopefully you can work together to try to schedule things so that they cause as little disruption as possible. By the way, we went through this with the DTV transition as well. It was less of a concern there because work could be scheduled for sort of off-peak hours in many cases. In this case, we're a little bit concerned that with the deadlines that people are currently operating under, they may not be able to do that. So another potential issue, actually it's not even a potential issue, it's just an issue, low power and translator stations. So there's over 5,000 low power and translator stations nationwide. These were not protected by Congress at all in the legislation authorizing the FCC to conduct the incentive auction. So the FCC is basically able to sort of displace them at will to make room for full power stations, which means that we may have thousands of low power and translator stations that are going to be looking for new channels. And while many of them will be able to find new channels, it is a certainty that not all of them will be able to. So one other thing, this is kind of a forward-looking problem. This is something you're not going to have to worry about for a while, but you are eventually going to have to worry about it. And that's viewer education. For your over-the-air viewers, when you change channels, they're going to have to rescan their sets to continue to receive your signal. That's not a big deal in that it's not super complicated, but it is a big deal in that it is something that all of your viewers are going to have to do. Otherwise, if you are a repack station, your over-the-air viewers will lose your signal. I mentioned the DTV transition in 2009. That was, in some ways, a more complicated viewer education proposal because we had more stuff to explain, right? We had to explain that we were moving from analog to digital. There was a converter box program. People had to buy a new television or get a converter box. They had to install things. There was a lot more work involved. In this case, this is literally something where you need to, you know, go to the settings on your television, tell your TV to rescan, and then you'll be fine. But the problem is that while the process is in some ways much simpler, The messaging is a little bit more complex because we don't have a single nationwide date that we can drive to. Instead, we have currently sort of at least 10 dates, and there may be multiple rescans required in every market. So the messaging around this is gonna get a little confusing. We at NAB, particularly, I can't take credit for this, particularly our marketing department has been working incredibly hard on trying to get ahead of this problem because we anticipate that this is gonna be a pretty heavy lift. So we have a website up that I'd encourage you to take a look at if you're curious. It's called tvanswers.org. It is meant to be a resource both for viewers but also for stations. A viewer can go there, enter their state and their county, find out what stations in their area are moving and when they are currently scheduled to move. You can also find out instructional information on how you rescan your set and things like that. Going forward, we're going to be partnering with local stations to, we're going to be helping you comply with the FCC's requirements around viewer education and doing things like helping create PSAs and stuff like that so that you can get the message out and make sure that your viewers can continue to find you. Okay, so we talked about a couple of potential problems. There are two massive potential problems that we know. One of them actually isn't even a potential problem, it's just a known problem. The two big issues are time and money. Those are the two big challenges, obviously, around the repack. Unsurprising. One of them, I'll take the second one first. Money, we already know, is a problem. There's $1.75 billion available to reimburse costs. Initial estimated costs came in at $2.1 billion. I was not a math major, but I can say that that does appear to not be an equal situation. We have a shortfall of a few hundred million dollars. I don't think, as a general matter, massive construction projects like this usually see costs go down as they go on. So I think that initial shortfall that we see of a few hundred million dollars may actually go up over the next few years. So our job is to convince Congress that Congress needs to allocate more money for you so that you will have all of your expenses covered. The initial promise of the incentive auction was that it would be a win-win. It'd be a win for the wireless industry so they could get access to spectrum that they needed, be a win for broadcasters who chose to participate in the auction, can make some money doing that, and broadcasters who chose not to participate in the auction would not be harmed by the auction. You'd be able to serve the same viewers that you serve today, and you would be made whole financially. We now know that that second part, being made whole financially, is not true. Right now, there is a shortfall of a few hundred million dollars, which divided among 957 stations is real money on average. I mean, that is hundreds of thousands of dollars per station on of shortfall that currently you would have to go out of pocket for. The other obviously big issue is time. I mentioned that 849 stations who submitted their transition reports currently estimate that they're on time to make it. Again, I think that's actually great news, but that does mean that there are about 100 stations that have concerns over their current deadlines. We want this to go as smoothly as possible. Every broadcaster wants it to go as smoothly as possible. I'm sure you all want your repack done yesterday. But we do have a little bit of concern that some of the FCC's deadlines may, in a few cases, prove overly ambitious. And our goal is to make sure that in the event that a station is unable to meet its currently scheduled transition deadline through no fault of its own, if you decide not to do the work, you're on your own. But if you are doing everything right, you're moving forward, and for some reason you can't get the work done, you can't get a transmitter ordered on time, you can't get a tower crew scheduled on time, something doesn't line up, you have an accident, God forbid you have a tower collapse or something like that, there ought to be some safety valve at the end of the process to allow you to continue to serve the same viewers that you're serving, to allow you to continue to transmit on your old channel until you're ready to cut over to your new facilities. So I promised that I would try to end on a good note, so let's go back to money for a second. Because while there is that shortfall right now, the good news is that there has been legislation introduced in Congress, bipartisan legislation, intended to make broadcasters whole in this process. We are going to continue to push very hard on moving that forward. It's never easy to get money out of, right now it's not easy to get anything out of Congress, but it's never easy to get money out of Congress. But this is a case where we think the equities are pretty clear. Broadcasters were promised that they would be made whole as a part of this auction. Right now, we're not going to be. So those really are our two biggest priorities as we move forward in this process, is making sure that broadcasters do not run into timing problems, and in particular, don't run into money problems. So I'm going to pause now for questions. My email address is right there. It's pmcfadden@nab.org. If you don't have questions now, if they come up later, if you think about anything later, if you encounter problems with the FCC's contractor, if you run into any difficulties with just about anything dealing with the FCC at all, I would really encourage you to drop me a line. I want to hear from you. I want to know what's happening. And it's not just me. I work with a whole team of people at NAB who work on this all day, every day. And so we want to be as helpful as we can. In addition to my email address, those of you who haven't heard enough from me already, I'll give you my direct dial, which is 202-775-4983. You can call me anytime. I want to be as helpful as possible, and we want to make sure that you have both the time and the money to successfully complete this project. I will pause now to see if there are any questions, and there's one right there.
Among the things that you noted there is possible things that could cause a delay, I did not see anything regarding potential legal challenges to the repack. What I can imagine all sorts of scenarios where lawsuits might get involved in some process here. Have you considered that, and are you expecting any?
Great question. So here's where we are procedurally. The FCC's, around the timing issue, the FCC's 39-month deadline remains the subject of a pending petition for reconsideration at the FCC. So eventually the FCC will have to decide that petition for reconsideration. I don't want to speculate about the FCC, but I'll just say if I were there, I could understand the motivation to leave that petition for reconsideration open until you see an actual problem develop and then rule on it. So then it would be ripe for a legal challenge. On the money issue, that's not really something the FCC can do anything about. Congress appropriates money, so we have to convince Congress to make more money available.
How about a winter in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, all the other states that have bad winter weather, plus the limited amount of tower crews that can work on these big towers? How has that been addressed?
So that's another good question. So one of the real challenges that we see with REPAC, I think it's probably the single greatest resource constraint, is around the number of qualified tower crews. Doing heavy broadcast work is not like doing wireless work. The antennas are much, much, much larger, shockingly large to someone who used to work in the wireless industry, and they are very high, and it is simply unsafe to climb these towers, even in some cases in high winds, or even if you've had a heavy rain, let alone if you have ice or snow. It's just unsafe. The bottom line, obviously, we all want to move through this process as quickly as we can. We want to comply with the FCC's rules, but we also want to be able to sleep at night. And so I don't think any broadcaster is going to, I hope they won't, use a tower crew that they don't feel is qualified to complete the work safely. We are acutely aware of the shortage of tower crews and how dangerous the work is. And I think that is a resource constraint that's going to become apparent pretty quickly as this process goes forward.
You mentioned earlier when you said the FCC was going to give about 50% of the money instead of 80% of the money to call our vendors. What do you expect our vendors to do?
Yeah, so this is something where I would love input from as many of you as are willing to share it. The FCC, I think, is under the impression that if they make about 50% upfront, that is a lot of money and allows you to do a lot of work. I suspect that's not true. I've talked to some stations who say, I need more than 50% upfront to be able to make down payments. I have tower work that's going to cost more than 50% of my initial cost estimate. I can't do anything. 50% is, you're not helping me out there. We need more of those stories. So if that's true, you have my email address, you have my number, I hope. I definitely want to hear from you if that's true. Because the way that we're going to convince the FCC to make more money available more quickly is to convince them that if they don't, they're creating an avoidable source of delay, right? At the end of the day, nobody wants to slow this process down. So FCC, please don't slow it down by holding on to the money for no good reason. Right. I mean, what is it? So the question was, we have manufacturers that haven't sold anything in years. What are they supposed to do? A lot of people have been looking forward to the repack as a great source of, a lot of vendors have been looking forward to the repack getting started and are looking forward to allocations being made available. It's great that the FCC wants to make allocations available, hopefully in October or November, but they need to make allocations available in a sufficiently large quantity so that you can actually make down payments on the equipment that you need to get moving. And if 50% doesn't cover that, we need to let the FCC know that because they are misinformed.
Sticking with the tower crew issue, 2 weeks ago this today, Miami Gardens experienced a three fatal individual tower accident. And the question here is, that was an experienced high tower crew. How proactive or reactive will the NEB be with the FCC in assuring that the schedule that they have set forth can be adjusted to accommodate for the fact that you now have one less high tower crew actively working towards this repack right now only because of the deaths? And if there should be, God forbid, any more of these accidents, how tight are they expecting the schedule to be adhered to?
So first I want to say, obviously, this was a really tragic accident. Our thoughts go out to the friends and families of the men who lost their lives. This is really dangerous work. It's one of the most dangerous jobs in America. In fact, I think it actually technically is the most dangerous job in America. My position on this is very clear. No broadcaster should feel any pressure to use a crew that they are not comfortable with under any circumstances. In this case, as I understand it, exactly as you said, this is one of the most experienced crews in the country. I think it underscores how dangerous this work is. We're going to continue to monitor both repacking progress and repacking resources as we go forward. I think the FCC is going to want to be, I will fearlessly predict that the FCC is going to want to be reasonable about this. And I don't want to draw a link between this accident and repacking, but I do think it is fair to note that the work is extraordinarily dangerous. And yeah, it's just something that the FCC is going to have to continue to closely monitor, as are we all. Are there any other questions? If not, I will happily return my time. But again, I just want to remind everyone, my email address is up there. My direct dial in my office is 202-775-4983. Do call me anytime if you have problems, if you have concerns going forward in this process. If you run into problems with the FCC's contractor, if you identify problems, if you identify bottlenecks in the process, we want to hear about it. So with that, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate the opportunity.